And welcome to Pitigui. Come in. This is a space where stories live, breathe, and connect us. Here we honor the voices of our Métis people, gathering wisdom from the past, celebrating resilience in the present, and shaping a path for the future. Each episode is a thread in the sash, weaving together tales of culture, tradition, and community. So come in, sit with us, and let's share stories that remind us who we are and where we belong. This is Pitigui. This is home. Eddie, I'd like to thank you for welcoming us here to Gordon's First Nation. It's a beautiful fall day, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Beautiful color.
Yeah. I'd like to introduce you to Mo Matthew. He's a chef that works for Métis Nation Saskatchewan. He's been with us for a short time here, but he's got a wealth of knowledge being a chef for most of his life. So Mo, Eddie Mo.
Yes.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.
So how long have you been living here on Gordon's at your ranch, Eddie?
Well, we moved out here in 81, I believe. And we raised cattle and kids and horses.
Okay.
And then in about 1998, the tribal council wanted to get into bison. And somehow I got to be the bison keeper. I'm not really sure how. I come home from work one day and they were building a corral in my yard.
Wow.
So I went and joined the tribal council to see what the plan was.
And you've been the bison keeper
The bison keeper, yeah. We started the first 5 years as a tribal council enterprise, and they didn't make any, they weren't making enough dollars, so they were going to sell the whole caboodle. And I said to them, no, let me look after them. You guys mind your own beeswax, and I will look after them, that they look after themselves. So we've been doing that with them since about 2005.
Nice.
And the first thing I started was things as such, bringing people in that were interested in the story of the bison. And I went out to different bison producers, First Nations and non-First Nations, and found out about the story of the bison. And since then, I've been finding other stuff. Reading, lots of reading, talking to people that have bison experience, watching film and whatever I can find about bison. I've been educating myself, and it's really been good.
Good for you.
It's been a real life changing. For myself, I quit drinking and doing drugs in 1976, and I went into horses, and then with the bison, it changed it around to you can go sit out in the bison pasture, and I go and take a chair and I just sit in the herd, and they have this real nice sound. And you can just sit there and go to sleep listening to that sound. Huh? And sometimes I take my truck and I lay under the truck just so I didn't get stepped on. And they became my friends. I used to spend 6-7 hours out there with them when they're babies. And I became, one of the old guys said, you become the leader of the herd. If they run, if you run, they'll run. When you stop, they'll stop. And then that's how the first 15 that we had, I became their friend. And it was really a life-changing experience. And my dad was always a hunter, and some of the First Nations didn't do their own bison. And he told me that if you're not going to do your own bison, give them up. You can't feed yourself and look after yourself and take responsibility for everything that they and you need, then don't do it. So I've been doing that since. I take them down, and with the people that want to take their own down, I allow them to do that. It's just that I talk with the person who's going to take down about my dad's protocol in recognizing the spirit of that animal. It's been very good in that way.
Nice.
We've had people who've come and bragged about being hunters, and but the bison don't know that, huh? And they messed up, huh? Because my dad said they've not recognized and give account to the spirit of that bison. And we believe everything has a spirit and is here to help us. It's just that we must recognize that ourselves in our own way. Each of us have our own way. I can share my way, but you can come and add your stuff to what you've been given.
Who shared those cultural teachings with you?
My dad, my mother, my great grandfather too. That was way before. On my mom's side, he used to talk about as a little wee small boy, the last buffalo hunts in our area. He was blind at the time when I was a teenager, and I used to sit and listen to his stories of the preparation for the buffalo hunts. And that's what he called them, the buffalo. And the same with my mushroom on my dad's side. He was a hunter into, and that's what they talked about, is how special it was. And then when the southeast region here came, that I could see that first time they came, I could see that excitement of the night before. People were getting prepared to go and see this bison, to prepare the bison, not to see it killed, but to prepare, because I told them immediately that I can't take, we can't all go and watch, because I'm directed that it mustn't be a spectator sport. Take the person who's going to take it, or the person that wants it, you go with them and you take it down for them, and let them give thanks too with myself in allowing that bison to feed us.
And those are people from Minister Friesen's region. And how long have you had that relationship with Minister Friesen?
I believe it's 4 or 5 years, and it's totally, it's gotten bigger now. Like when we first started, we have three teepees and one camper, and it's gotten bigger. Like this last time here, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teepees, and great big ones. And we had 1, 2, 3, 4, I believe, camper tents. And then we have 1, 2, 3, about four campers. The really rough it guys.
It was my first time joining you guys out here this summer, and I had a really good time learning a lot about the culture and about the harvesting the bison. So I had this idea of doing a cooking episode, and so I brought my good friend Mo Matthew out here today. And I thought, what better story than to have a talk with Eddie Bitternose, who is a steward of the land and steward of the bison, the buffalo, and to eventually do a cooking episode with Mo. So Mo, how long have you been cooking?
40 years? 40 years. Jeez, that sounds terrible, but yeah, it's about that long, yeah.
And where did you get your start?
My mom's kitchen, like everybody that's working in kitchens, I guess that's where I got it. My grandma, I must have been slow as a kid. I got trapped in the kitchen, but I ended up liking it a lot, and I was my mom's little helper. And so when it was time to pick a career, I went and, like everybody else, tried a bunch of different things, but it was always cooking for me. So cooking and gardening has been a big part of my life since I've been a little kid.
And what drives you to be a chef every day?
Well, I don't get to cook as much as I'd like now. In my capacity as a food security person, I still get to play in the kitchen. Not as much as I'd like to, but I still get to play in the kitchen. And it's good every time you can give food and share food with people. That's something for the heart, right? So I love that. I'll do that till the day I die. I'm sure that's my calling.
Nice. So before we came on camera, we were sharing a few stories here, Eddie, about buffalo and bison and the difference between the beef and bison. What goes into harvesting a bison? Like when Marg's crew comes out here, what can you share us the steps that goes along with it?
Well, we come and we talk about the bison with folks that want to listen to us around the fire here, and then the hunters decide of that group decide which one's going to do the shooting or whether, like the first time they came, I was the shooter. Then the second time they came, one of the guys that was a hunter said he would like to do it. So we talked about we talked about our preparing mentally, that somehow the spirit of the bison is not the same as hunting an elk or moose or deer. There seems to be a spiritual connection that your spirit must be in the right place. We've had with Minister Friesen's group, we've had situations where, well, I'm gonna shoot, but the spirit of the hunt doesn't seem to be there. So and that's okay. We learned that, you know. So when we went out with the hunt with the shooter, well, this couldn't do it. Because the herd will give you that opportunity to say, I'm here, you know, take me. And if you don't decide at that moment, then your hunt is gonna go for another 2 hours. So that's that preparation. And so we've learned through the years that they've come that there's that preparation, the spiritual preparation, with the people that are taking it down, and it seems to really work well. Because I'll go out in the morning and talk with our creator and the bison, to say that thank him for being here. And that we are going to use his stuff the best way we know how. And in my learning, I learned that back in the day there was 147 uses of the bison, and we only use now maybe 14.
Can you name some of those 14 uses?
The kidneys, the liver, the hide for tanning and doing what we do with the hide. The meat, of course, the different meats. Sometimes if they leave me the tail, I use the tail, we call it the shoe fly. We dry it out and hang it under the belly of our horse, and then when he's walking, the tail is... the flies don't bother them, or we put it under their jaw, and then when they throw their head up, then the flies stay, keep the flies away from I guess you call it the scrotum of the bison too. Some of the guys come and get that, and they make rattles out of it. So those are some of the stuff that actually happened. The hooves, they dry them or they boil them off the meat, and some of our power dancers use them as crackers instead of bells. or they use the milk belts. That's the some of the stuff we've come to do as we've come along. And most of the, and with the Southeast region group, mostly it's the meat and the hide. And then they take the, they also take the head. And one of the members decorates it. And I'm not really sure. They haven't brought me back once to look at it. But that's the story.
Okay.
And so it's their story. I'm not going to tell them it's wrong because I didn't see the story yet. But the one of the ladies or young girls that skins the head is just awesome. She just does a real, really
good. Mo Mundor.
Is that her name?
Yeah, Mo Mundor. Oh, the young lady races sled dogs, yeah. And she's one heck of a an outdoors woman. So
yeah.
So Mo, in your 40 years of cooking, how often do you work with bison meat?
As much as I can. I was lucky enough to have a restaurant in Regina about 10 or 12 years ago. It's still there, and it's still kind of doing what we set out to do, which was doing local and seasonal products. And so when we started the restaurant, it was very, very important to me to have bison. And so we would do the whole animal when we cooked bison, and we made sure that we were not wasting anything. So if you buy, normally how cooks work is you buy the steak and you cook the steak, right? And so that's it. Or if you're going to do more, you buy like a primal cut and you do the own cuts and whatever. We were buying the whole animal, and then we would use from the hump to the tail, right? And so I made it very important to us to use that local meat and to use it in a way that was a little bit different. I don't like doing bison steaks. I like doing bison meat. So lots of different things, stews, short ribs were a big thing. The hump was a really neat piece because it's like almost like a brisket in that. And try selling a bison hump. Like, that just doesn't sound appetizing.
Okay. Can you share with me, what do you do with a bison hump?
We would braise it for a really, really long time. And it's got a whole bunch of connective tissue in it. It's really kind of fatty. And then after that's all said and done, then we'd go to the smoke and we'd smoke it, get a little bit of beautiful brown on the outside, a little bit of char mark. And then we cut it up really thin and put it with different stuff. Again, local stuff like blueberry jams and sauces. And yeah, it was awesome.
You'd mentioned the tail. What would you do with a bison tail?
Well, we'd go to the tail, not use the tail.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was out. But we went, we would use right from just above the hoof all the way up. So we would use, we would do bison. We'd do toast points in bison marrow. And so you roast bison shank, and then you'd go with toast and you'd get out the marrow. And it's something very old school, like old timers. They would sell us out every time because they knew what it was, but the new generation didn't know it, didn't respect it, had no place for it. And so bison marrow is a really kind of rare thing to have, but what a cool different thing to have, eh?
And certainly. Eddie, does that ring a bell with you?
Yes, we use a little stick, yeah. We cut a stick about a year long, make a little ball on the end, then we put it into the bone, yeah. And we kind of scrape it out like that.
That's exactly right, though. If you know what it is,
yeah,
then you know how good it is. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't, that didn't sound too appetizing, no, eh?
That looks kind of greasy.
It is kind of greasy. Yeah.
So me not like being an urban matey, I've never had buffalo marrow. What is the texture like?
Yeah, it's greasy. Like it's hard to explain because it's like gelatin, but it's a fatty gelatin. So when you take it out, you can smear it on bread, and then when you have it that way, or lots of people I've just seen like take
Yeah.
it out with like breadsticks or sticks or whatever, and they'll just eat it like that. When it goes in your mouth, it tastes like meat, but then it evaporates in your mouth. And so it's a real different consistency. It's got its own flavor, but it's very unique. Very unique.
Ed, how would have you had Merrill?
I would say it when I tell the kids that if you scrape it out, if you get a small enough knife to scrape it out and put it on your bannock, it's like a sandwich spread. Back in the day, that greasy little meat that the last part of the cow or whatever it is, but it's got that different kind of taste or a different kind of, as you say, it seems to dry up or just disappear in your mouth. But if you like, my dad and them used to spread it on a chunk of bread or a piece of bannock and then put salt on.
Yeah, salt. You have to have salt.
Oh, awesome, man. Or if you took it off his stick and put it in a saucer, then he dipped his chunks, little chunks of bannock in there and just like, well, I can just like savoring it. You guys are making me hungry sitting here. Oh, it lasts for a long time.
All this bannock and bison talk, you're making me hungry.
That's, yeah, no, and we don't eat marrow very much. Like, we've lost that, we've lost that taste for it or whatever. And yet it's really, really healthy. Yeah, it's supposed to be able to help you, fight off disease and stuff when you eat it. What the heck do they call that stuff now? It puts antibodies into your body that will fight off cold, weakness, sores, sore legs, and that kind of stuff. So.
Eddie, why do you think that tradition has been lost for even things like marrow?
Well, it's gotten too easy to go to the store, huh? Like when I bring kids out and we do a bison tail, that's what kids said. We don't do this. My mom will go to the store and get this meat. It's we become too fast paced, I think. We don't take time to do this. Well, like look at this beautiful ground here. When somebody else is interviewing, we'd be in a room or an office all closed in and not listening to the trees or the fire cracking, and we lose that natural human connection, right? To all of this, this stuff that's around us. Like, this is really cool.
Yeah, this is
Yeah.
beautiful. It's October 4th, and we're
Yeah.
sitting out here. I got a little jacket on, and it's certainly a nice day. So Mo, like I said, I'm not a chef. I'm not very good at cooking. What part of the buffalo is the best part of it, in terms of what's the kind of meat that people want the most?
So lots of people understand bison to be very lean, and very lean is it comes with a set of challenges, right? And so you kind of have to add fat for certain dishes and whatever. However, there's the long and low meat that like roasts and making stews and different things where there's going to be a long and low preparation, and you're going to get really good results if you let it just sit. Throw it in the slow cooker in the morning and see what happens by the time you get home. That works totally great with bison. And it's just such a beautiful thing to work with. Short ribs are kind of my passion when it comes to meat. And so having that little bit of fat next to the bone, you throw it in, long and low braising, and all of a sudden you got an amazing, amazing end product. But bison steaks are tricky to cook. So I always do braising, long and low, stewing, whatever I can to not be as lazy as I can, but you know.
So you said tricky. Tricky in what way?
When you don't have all that connective tissue and all that fat to protect it, the flavor's there, the flavor's great. But the mouthfeel that we understand from cooking cows is different than that of bison. So you have to be very aware of making them very small, so not a thick cut, and cooking them very fast. Or if you're going to cook them a different way, to have something like tallow or something to give it the fat that it needs so that you can appreciate the flavors.
Oh man, you guys are making me hungry. I can't stop thinking of eating now. So Eddie, when you were growing up, how did your mother prepare bison buffalo back in the day?
I didn't grow up with my family. I went to residential school from when I was 9 till I was 16, but I was we were Kokum kids. We didn't have bison, but we had lots of my mushroom family. There were hunters on both sides, so we always had wild meat. And like I said, back then we ate the meat right out of the hide. The men would be skinning. My kokum would come with her pan and slicing off chunks. Throw it on the frying pan, and then throw some grease in the pan and start making fry bread. Well, and then when they were all done skinning and telling their stories about killing the great big one, and he was just a little wee one like that, they would all come inside and eat like right out of the hide almost. And no one got sick, yeah. Like I think that's like the, again, that's the differences today. Now today we have to hang them up, and we gotta let the meat prepare. Back then our bodies, and even like I said, my dad and his brothers and my grandparents, their systems could handle that fresh meat, I guess, or that fresh blood in them. The blood in the meat, and not create bad stomachs like we now. We have to take all of the stomach stuff every time we eat something a little too fresh. And back then we didn't. Back then, with my, like I said, being a Kokum kids, we ate straight out of the house. Grab it, got you right out of the hide into the pot, man.
Fast food.
Yes, real fast. And everything went in there,
So, Eddie, what does it mean to you to be a steward of the land and take care of the bison now?
It means teaching our young kids. Like I said, I invite schools or classrooms that contact me and say, well, next Thursday I have a hunter coming in and they're taking down a bison. You want to come and help? And so I'm letting the kids understand that we still do this. The respect of the spirit of nature is important. And that's one of the things that I try to emphasize to the kids that are viewing and helping prepare the bison to go to whatever butcher shop this guy that comes and harvest the bison. So I've been doing that for the last 15 years. COVID kind of put a hump in everything. In the last couple of years, it's been really slow with the schools. But however, I have more teachers now saying, Ed, when are you doing bison? We'd like to bring the grade 7 and 8. Then I get all excited, because we get that teaching again, and these kids taking a knife and preparing actual live meat. Because sometimes it's kind of actually funny. Sometimes they'll make a slice, and in whether and the blood will fall out of come out of And they get all, they go screaming away, even kids, like young men. or we open the inside up, huh? And then when you open the insides up, sometimes they rumble because they've been so tight in there. The bison has, he's on a tarp, has no hide on him and everything, and they open him up and everybody disappears. He's getting up, he's getting up. Come on, kids, you know, he's got no hide on. He's not going to get out. But the, lots of the little kids too, there's so many movies out there of crazy things like with people that eat other people. And then when they kind of put themselves through this bison with no fur on and just nice looking meat to me. and when you open them up to take the innards out, sometimes it kind of... And the kids all run away with their knives, looking for the buster, the truck. And then I've also had, I don't know whether it's legal to say that, but I've also had celebrities come and take part. Anderson Cooper, with his fancy clothes and all that stuff. And then he's right in there with the kids with his Oxfords and his white shirt and his cutting out. And of course, as First Nations people were kind of humorous, and we found one kidney and we couldn't find the other one. So he wanted to get in there, so I told him, go ahead. Yeah. But Bison might have been a diabetic, and lots of us First Nations people, we give our kidney to someone else. Eh? Maybe he got it. He's looking at me. Is that real?
Oh.
But we dug around until we found it.
Yeah.
Kidney's pretty tasty, huh? If you cook it right. Well, same with the tongue. We have certain people that cook the tongue, you know, and you got, again, you got to cook it that certain way, huh?
Yeah.
So how do you cook the tongue?
I don't cook the tongue.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
The lady that do that.
And Mo, have you ever cooked a buffalo tongue?
Yeah. Okay. We used to make bison ravioli. So we take the tongue, you braise it, and that goes long and low for a really long time. And then when it's done, then you peel all the protective layer off the meat, because you don't eat the outside of the tongue. It's like the texture is like hard sandpaper, and so not fun even to touch, right? So you take all that stuff off, but the meat in the tongue is delicious. But again, it's a hard sell, right? And I got a tongue the first time to try, and I took it home, and I'm like, I had to cook it in secret, like my kids couldn't know about it, right? And so I cooked it off, and then I'm like, this is going to be hard to sell the bison steak because it's shaped like a tongue, right? So I came up with these bison raviolis. So I'd cut up all the meat and put it in there, and they went over like hotcakes. My kids loved them right up until I told them what it was, and then that wasn't so good. But it made its way onto menus after that, and it's awesome. It's great.
What was your kids' reaction when you told them it was bison tongue?
Yeah, not good, right? They want to know, like, they want to see it at the store. You know what I mean? Like, they want to see it like that. And so that space at Safeway that still sells tongue, they don't do it very often anymore, but the old cuts, you'd see stuff, but people would walk really fast by them, right? Because two things, it's unappetizing to look at, and people don't know how to cook it. And so between those two things, they go straight to ground beef, and they know how to cook that, or craft dinner. And so those mistakes are made. And I think respecting the animal, the whole animal, is kind of a cool thing. And you have to use a little imagination to make things really delicious, but it's worth it. Totally worth it.
Ed, we have gotten some meat from Minister Friesen to make a stew. Mo, what will go into us preparing the stew to serve?
I think with bison, we're gonna make it pretty much as simple as we can. So those potatoes, carrots, onions, you know, that standard stuff. But I think too, what goes really well with bison is turnips. So we'll roast some turnips and throw those in, brown up some of the meat real nice. And hopefully we can hunt down some bison bones to actually get some bison stock. Because if you get beef stock to go into the bison stew, you don't get all those crazy flavors, right? So I'm going to see if I can track down some bison bones.
Is that anything you could help us out with, Eddie?
I might. Yeah, depending on the time, huh? Yeah, so it's a couple weeks away, maybe a week, or we'll have some fresh ones.
Yeah, that would be great.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah. On that tongue thing, the wrapper on the tongue, I skint that off and put it on a sticker bowl for this, and they just make an awesome horseradish.
Yeah.
After they dry those tassels on the tongue or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Like they just clean your horse hair, all the dirt out of it and everything. Actually, better than.
Also good with the itchy backs.
A horse brush from the bison tongue.
You just got to hang it up each time here, because you leave it on the ground, the dog will eat it. No, they really work good.
That's a neat idea, yeah.
Okay, well, Ed, I would like to thank you for inviting us out here to your ranch on Gordon's First Nation here. It's been a pleasure coming here and getting to know you this past summer, and you were so welcoming to invite us back here to film the first part of this episode. I'd like to invite you and your wife to come to when Mo and I actually do the cooking. I'd like to invite you and your wife to come and join us and have some stew and bannock with us and be allies and be friends in a good way. So I'd like to invite you out for that.
We'll be there, yep.
Yeah, good, good.
So, Ed, in closing, what does it mean to you to have people like us to come out here and want to learn from you about bison and their connection to the land?
I think our connection as people. Well, again, like we forget about each other. Being people from the city, from another city, from the bushes, as I call you sometimes, and this guy from the wilderness. That's the wandering Métis there. Put it in the wilderness. Yeah. But I think it's about good neighbor stuff. Helping each other, learn about each other, and having a different understanding about what's around us. Like the world is so fast, we forget to look at the color of the ground, or how nice this carpet is, and listening to those trees, because when I was a teenager, that's what my mom's dad, that's what he would tell me when I would come home and be all stressed out about being the only First Nations in an all-white team. Who sits by the tree, grandson, and listen to what it tells you? There's not just your mom and dad there that would take the leaves, and that's all the people that came before you. That's all your relatives and the branches that they're on. That's your strength. Take that and just sit there and listen. Because the first time I went, I come back in here and that thing was showing up. Then he said, well, go out and kick that tree. Well, I kicked that tree and then I sat beside it. And then I come back the next night. He said, well, kick that tree, mushroom. And what did he tell you? Nothing. But he sure hurt my foot. Well, you shouldn't have kicked it so hard. And then he told me about the leaves and all that stuff, and how there's so many other people besides what we see every day cheering for us and saying, don't give up, keep going. The world is yours if you want it. Just go on, put your hand out there and and people will accept you, you know, and don't give up. You know?
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's a good teaching.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you again
for
inviting me out here. Eddie and Mo, it's a pleasure to have you out here, and I look forward to the second half of the episode and getting in the kitchen with you and preparing some of that bison, and hopefully we can make Eddie happy with some stew and bannock. What do you think?
I'm going to guarantee it. That's my guarantee.
That we're going to make him happy?
I'm actually getting really good at bannock, so yeah.
Yeah.
It's taken my whole life. But yeah, we'll put it to the test. Tell me how I do when we when we get together next.
Oh, yes, I will. My wife will too.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
It's been awesome.